So what happened with the patient, Steve?
In this particular case, he was offered the opportunity to go on a clinical trial of FOLFOX and cetuximab and was very interested, but because he lived some distance from the Mayo Clinic and had gone back home to be treated, his physician there gave him treatment off study. He received 7 cycles, tolerated it pretty well, not surprisingly, had a moderate rash, cytopenias, and mild neuropathy that developed. The response that he had, it was with 7 cycles, a really dramatic response. Much of the disease in the right side of the liver shrank significantly to a point where there are just very small residual lesions that could be seen. And what was seen appeared necrotic. There certainly weren't any new areas of metastatic disease, no extrahepatic disease.
Chan, what do you think about those images?
Oh, it's a very impressive response, clearly. The big lesion in the right lobe, I don't see any more. For the purpose of this, it looks a dramatic response.
So, Fergus, if you want to pick a percent reduction in tumor, what would you roughly give a guess at based on what you're seeing there?
By volume, it's got to be well over 50% and probably closer to 70 or 80%.
So what happened then?
He did go to surgery, had an extended right hepatectomy and a wedge resection of segment 2, as well as a low anterior resection for his sigmoid tumor. And the pathology showed global necrosis with one microscopic site of disease within what was taken out of the liver. All the margins were free. And the sigmoid tumor showed just an ulceration with no residual tumor. 1 of 20 lymph nodes showed evidence of metastatic disease.
You didn't re-image the sigmoid lesion, I'm sure, or did you?
It
before
was
surgery.
Just as part of the CT scan.
Probably as part of the CT scan.
And I didn't show that.
Right. And can you just finish up in terms
of... This is just post-op day 6 showing the residual liver. I'll go beyond that. But the important point, again, I think the concern was he was somebody that had quite a bit of disease, but with such a good response, he received 5 more cycles of FOLFOX and cetuximab after he recovered from surgery. And as of June of this year, he was out 24 months from the time of surgery with no evidence of recurrent disease.
John?
I think there's just a few things to comment on the surgical strategy here, which we haven't brought up already. Firstly, the management of his left colonic cancer. The decision here clearly was to give chemotherapy first and then do a synchronous procedure, which I would not do. Interesting the description of low anterior resection, which you don't need for a sigmoid cancer, so I don't quite understand that. I think the strategy for the liver, though, is I would be entirely in accord with. That's perfectly reasonable. I think we would probably have taken the sigmoid out laparoscopically earlier and certainly not done it at the same time as a liver resection. But the liver approach, I think we would do the same.
Why would you have done that before? I mean, this patient apparently needed continuous treatment.
Well, I think with such a good response, you could certainly do a laparoscopic sigmoid resection without the inconvenience of a very large incision, and then within a few weeks do the liver, and through a much smaller incision. So I think that's a much better way of doing the...
Is that for everybody or more in people with symptoms or bleeding?
I suspect he would not be bleeding by the time he came to surgery because he had a complete response.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that can be an issue. In this particular case, because he's had a very good response, it's not an issue. But I still think separating the colon procedure, which has got morbidity and mortality, and the liver procedure is sensible, particularly since they're at opposite ends of the abdominal cavity and need quite a large approach. So that would be my approach here.
Just a quick question, if I can go back to the KRAS story with Alan and Steve, since your studies were affected by what happened at ASCO. Is it your understanding, was there much discussion about the prognostic aspects, potentially, of KRAS? Because there's divergence from the CRYSTAL trial, where there was no effect when everybody got FOLFIRI between wild type and the mutants. But in the panitumumab study, there's actually quite a big difference in a third-line setting. Was there any discussion of how it might change the, once you've eliminated all the mutants out of the group, how much it changes the stats?
There was, of course, because we had to figure out a sample size for the KRAS wild type. And our consensus is we couldn't tell if there was a prognostic role or not, so we elected to consider it neutral.
Similarly, we had that discussion and couldn't come up with data that would clearly allow us to calculate that.
Rich?
I wanted to ask Steve, this patient had such a dramatic response, and there's data that suggests that if you resect sites of disease where complete remission has occurred, you often will still find residual tumor.
Right.
And there certainly is data that regional recurrences in apparent complete remission are highly common. So did your surgeon resect all sites where disease was evident on the pretreatment scan or just the areas where disease was predominant? And then the second question is, I know that the NCCTG did a successor study to the first liver resection trial where you used cetuximab plus FOLFOX, and that study did not go forward to a phase 3 because the results were disappointing. Obviously, that occurred before we knew the KRAS story, so we don't know whether those patients had KRAS mutations or not, although presumably had tissue on them, so you could retrospectively go back and do that.
That was the study he considered going
correct.
On.
So correct. Could you comment on sure. both of those questions?
Sure. In regard to the first point, you're exactly right. The concern would be that in a case with a dramatic response like this, you still want to try to resect all of the areas of known disease, even that may no longer be visible in this case. Indeed, that was the intent of the surgery, to resect all the areas where there had been disease. He had initial scan done after the first 3 cycles. There was evidence of response. The decision was made to go on for another 3 cycles because of a potential delay in surgery, ended up getting 7 versus 6, but had a really dramatic response with those additional 4 cycles of treatment.
How was his liver at surgery? His normal
he
liver?
Was somebody who had very normal liver, so fortunately he had very little impact from his therapy.
And what about the trial, the cetuximab?
The trial, it was greatly disappointing. I think using this patient as example, people can have a tremendous response. Whether the cetuximab truly added anything to that, we'll never know, obviously, in his case. The trial showed several things. One, we were seeing a lot of hematologic toxicity that seemed out of bounds for FOLFOX, and the concern in part was the cetuximab somehow adding to that.
How many patients actually were on the study?
The study closed with, I believe, 22 having been enrolled, and the plan had been to go up to about 45 or 48. And at that point in the interim analysis, we were essentially one patient below the boundary of continuing the trial. So it will be very important to go back and look at the KRAS status of the patients who were enrolled to see if for some reason we're just unlucky to get a large number that had tumors that had mutated KRAS.
What were the actual numbers on the 22 patients in terms of responses and all?
There were 5 patients out of the group that had had a response.
Steve, what about the issue of the time course of progressive disease or recurrence after hepatic surgery? This guy's out 2 years now?
2 years.
He turns around and says, what's the chance that maybe in the next couple of years or a few years I might develop progressive disease or more disease?
Well, we know that the highest recurrence risk is in the first 2 years after. What I tell my patients, the clock starts when all therapy is finished. So this patient got essentially a sandwich technique, chemotherapy, resection, more chemotherapy. So the clock starts running at that point. We know if you're going to take all patients who develop recurrent disease, be it at the liver or extrahepatic sites, anywhere between 80 and 90% of those happen in that first 2 years. So that's the highest risk. We watch people closely then. There's another group who are going to be up to 5 years, and then there's still a very small portion. In the studies like Renee Adams that have looked at survival out to 10 years show that there's still a slight drop in that tail in the 5 to 10 year range. And again, anecdotally, I've had a few patients show up with very bizarre sites of metastatic disease somewhere between 7 and 10 years after a liver resection, brain metastases, for example, or adrenal metastases.
I want to talk a little bit about the issue of the simultaneous primaries, both colon in this case, and we have a case for rectal in terms of how you think it through. Steve?
Related to that exact question, I would agree with John that when the decision about doing 2 operations versus 1, this is a big operation, big liver and sigmoid colectomy, we often will combine those. More and more now we're combining them, but I think it's very reasonable and perhaps prudent in most situations to separate them.
Which one comes first?
Well, that's the point I wanted to make, is that our philosophy now at Hopkins is more and more now to do the hepatectomy first. because of chemotherapy, chemotoxicity issues, and so forth. So either we would have done this in one operation, perhaps, depending on the body habitus and other factors, or we would have done the liver first. And then at the time of liver, you can see, assess it, and then later maybe more chemotherapy, and then the kind of end with a colon resection. The other alternative is if there's any chance that one thinks that the liver operation has to be staged. I'm not sure. Right hepatectomy plus a wedge or more on the left may warrant a staged resection. In that case, I would have done the sigmoid colectomy plus clearing the left for the first operation and then coming in and doing the right. Point being is that there are different ways to manage the one or two operations.
Axel?
Just want to kind of update. I think everyone on what was presented at ESMO, and I just showed AAA here, the data of the Salem study, which was presented at ESMO. They randomized patients, Steve might have seen that, with unresectable liver metastasis, which they defined as more than 5 metastases or interference with anatomical structures, to either FOLFOX plus cetuximab or FOLFIRI plus cetuximab. An outcome was resectability, so similar to the NCCTG trial. And they did some preliminary KRAS analysis, but they didn't really report the results according to KRAS. So they had 85% responses, which were not necessarily confirmed, for FOLFOX cetuximab, and 66% responses for FOLFIRI cetuximab. For KRAS wild-type, they lumped these two groups together with 79% responses. I think what's more important is that they had 40 and 43% of patients which were deemed unresectable to undergo resection later, and 37 and 34% were R0 resections.
So, Steve, what about the issue of number of mets? Is it legitimate to say greater than 5 unresectable?
What do you have?
No. The answer is we don't use an absolute number. Again, if we can follow the criteria that we've outlined here, which is leaving an adequate volume of perfused liver, good biliary drainage, good outflow. We've taken out as many as 15 metastases, and our own data review from MD Anderson showed that while those patients' survival is not as good as somebody with 1, 2, or 3 metastases, it's still, you know, over a third of the patients are alive, even though some with disease at up to 5 years later.
So, John, do you agree with that?
Absolutely agree with that. The caveat would be, I think, that we would never take on a patient with 30 metastases and not give them chemotherapy first. And,
right.
You know, we can look at a case later, perhaps. But if they get a good response to chemotherapy, you take out whatever's left, I think the survival can be quite good. It's never going to be as good as someone with a solitary met a few years after their primary was taken out. But it's still not zero, and it's worth doing.
One of the questions that comes up, and this question was asked to Steve, which is, did the surgeon perform the correct oncologic operation, i.e. did they take out all the areas where the tumor was found? And in this case, that was possible. The common case that we're now being presented with is a patient with, say, 12, 15 metastases truly involving every segment in the liver. So they get chemotherapy. Some of the lesions disappear. So you then do a resection. By definition, you can't resect the entire liver. So we're leaving areas behind where maybe even with intraoperative ultrasound, you can't find tumor. So that's a problem that we never had to face prior to some of these active agents coming on board. And we're now following those patients. And again, what we're finding is some patients do seem to have a true path CR, meaning they're not recurring. Whereas others, as you follow them over several years, those lesions that were subclinical now will reappear in that site. The one thing that's impressive about this case, and again, I just want to plea here to not be nihilistic or not go into a palliative mode. Based on the appearance of that scan, that was fairly daunting appearing even to a hepatobiliary surgeon. And you'd have to say, as was commented, this is going to require a pretty darn good response. Well, he had a pretty darn good response. And so I think that just goes to indicate
that's
the
really
patient deserves a chance. The patient has to be given every opportunity to show they can respond.
But the one mistake that would have been made here is by an uninformed medical oncologist who had just given him systemic therapy would be to see that great response and then not send them to the surgeon.
Or to take the primary out, figure it's palliative and we'll just take the primary out and you wait 2 months and then the horse is out of the barn conceivably.
Rich?
So I actually want to ask the question. I'm getting the sense that there's a rising tide among the medical oncologists in the group that for KRAS wild-type patients, the preferred first-line therapy in this circumstance or perhaps in people with disseminated disease who would never be candidates for resection is FOLFOX or FOLFIRI plus cetuximab. And I concur with the enthusiasm about the data that was presented at ASCO regarding that, but I wonder about it becoming a fast adopter of that strategy. For one reason, cetuximab isn't indicated in first-line treatment of colon cancer at the moment, and there may be some people that will end up with a $5,000 a month treatment that is unreimbursable to them. But I'd like to put that question on the table. Are people using KRAS testing immediately and using cetuximab instead of bevacizumab if wild type is positive?
Axel?
Not in a palliative mode. I don't think the data we've seen, even in the KRAS wild type subgroup, in terms of time-related endpoints, progression-free survival benefit, etc., would trump what I would perceive as benefit from, let's say, FOLFIRI or FOLFOX plus or Optimox plus bevacizumab. But I do see, and again, we don't have the definitive data yet. They'll come from your trial, for instance, or from other trials, like the Salem trial, the German trial that I just presented, that for wild-type KRAS patients, wild-type KRAS tumors, there is a great potential that FOLFOX plus cetuximab, for instance, could be the treatment of choice. And this is supported in some ways by Allen's 8203 trial, where the response rate was actually quite high when cetuximab was added to FOLFOX, plus 20% gain in response rate, and the OPUS trial, plus 24% gain in confirmed and reviewed responses, which I think is quite remarkable. And if we now believe that for the conversion therapy situation, response rate is the surrogate marker for what we should do, then I think this creates a strong rationale and could perhaps only be beaten by FOLFOXIRI plus cetuximab, you know.
I guess we should clarify, Alan, that this is all indirect comparisons. It's interesting. Yeah. The same thing is going on in lung cancer, first-line non-small cell. Now they have cetuximab data, but it's got to be an indirect comparison. What are some of the key data sets you think about, Alan, when you try to make that indirect comparison? And also the issue of combining oxali and irinotecan.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Again, I think in this patient who really needed some heavy lifting, why save something? The problem with FOLFOXIRI, at least as published, there are two studies that have been published. One was absolutely negative with much more toxicity in the combination arm.
And what was the design there?
That was a randomization, FOLFOXIRI versus FOLFOX, and that was a Greek study from the Hellenic Oncology Group. Now, the problem is that they did very little surgery in that study, and I think you could worry about the sort of nature of care broadly in those patients. There's another study that looks quite favorable for FOLFOXIRI compared to FOLFOX.
There's a lot of kind of confusing data that might not really allow to assess what the actual benefit of adding oxaliplatin to FOLFIRI is or irinotecan to FOLFOX.
I would like to speak to Rich's point, which is right on, which is I think the standard frontline remains Bev. And I think my study will get at if you take KRAS wild type, is cetuximab a better biologic? And cetuximab not being reimbursed by insurers in frontline, and in California at least, they're pretty good about figuring out whether to reimburse for cetuximab. This patient I would have treated with chemotherapy and Bev.
Steve, what do we know about the effects of the combination of oxali and irinotecan on the liver?
Essentially, it's not very good. We did a small phase 2 study at MD Anderson that looked at IROX, irinotecan, and oxaliplatin, so no 5-FU added in. So it was just truly those two agents. And those patients all went to resection and essentially had livers that were very soft, steatosis, no steatohepatitis, because patients got no more than 6 cycles of treatment. But certainly they did have a higher incidence, at least in that small subset of 20-some patients, of hepatic insufficiency and just had some problems postoperatively.
I just had a quick question for Alan. For people that you want to, like this patient, for example, where you really need to shrink tumors, I'm a little unclear with the bevacizumab question coming from Len's paper where the response rate was absolutely
so the same. I would have treated this patient with FOLFIRI Bev is what I would have done, since I happen to think that that's a more...
FOLFIRI Bev.
This patient?
Mm-hmm.
I would have used FOLFIRI Bev. My default backbone is FOLFIRI because I happen to agree. I don't think that Bev adds much to FOLFOX, so we would have started with FOLFIRI. But 88% of the rest of the country would have started with FOLFOX.
Yeah, I know what people give.
No,
but it sounds like you're changing your chemo regimen just so you can give a drug that doesn't seem to help.
No. If you look at side-by-side, the randomized studies, the best arm of any study is a FOLFIRI-BEV arm. And so if I'm making a choice where I'm looking for the maximal outcome, this is just my opinion, I would use FOLFIRI-BEV. The patients I put on 80405 got FOLFIRI as the backbone. That is sort of my default starting place.
I'd really like to get on that because as far as I recall, we only have phase 2 data on FOLFIRI-BEV.
There's the arm of the BIC-C trial.
Yeah, which is
a randomized phase 2. It's a small data set, but we have a lot of data that certainly suggests that BEV isn't particularly additive to FOLFOX.
Yeah.